on healthcare, Subcommittee on Healthcare Access, and open a public hearing on House Bill 2733. And with that, I'll ask the bill's chief sponsor and the chair of this committee, Representative Greenlick, if you'd like to introduce, or perhaps the committee administrator would like to say a few words about the bill. I'll defer to the chair.
Thank you. Okay.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the subcommittee. House Bill 2733 comes before the subcommittee at the request of Representative Greenlick. It requires covered entities to file an annual report on system safeguards for protecting the confidentiality of individually identifiable health information. This has no revenue impact, and we have no fiscal information on this bill at this time.
Thank you, Sandy. And Representative Greenlick.
Thank you. I'm Representative Mitch Greenlick, House District 33, which includes at least two major health care systems, the Legacy and the Sisters of Providence in that district, and it has me very much interested in this issue. I was particularly intrigued with the kind of financial scandals we've had in this country over the last several years, the WorldCom scandal, Enron, and a variety of other scandals. In each of those scandals, one thing that they had in common was major executives in those corporations, Enron, WorldCom, and several others we can think of, all basically said, boy, something was really wrong in my company, and I wish I had known about it because I could have certainly had done something about it. Sometimes that statement was the truth, and sometimes that statement, as we heard in the federal criminal case against some of the executives at Enron, that was simply a lie. But the congressional reaction to that kind of going on was the creation of the Sarbanes-Oxley bill, which required CEOs and CFOs of major corporations to sign the financial statements of those corporations and to certify that they were willing to take responsibility that what was in those financial statements were correct. That made the investors of these corporations, and my IRA was one that bought WorldCom bonds when they were rated investor class bonds because of simply fraudulent information that was provided to the SEC and other regulators, to have confidence in the stock market again, because we really did now begin to believe that the information that was provided, the financial information that was provided by those companies, could be trusted, at least to the extent to which you could imagine a CFO and a CEO trying to find out what was behind those reports if they had assigned them as being valid. We had a major case of 300,000 or so personal medical records going disappeared because the organization that maintained those records had a flawed data security system. And in fact, for one component of that organization, the data security system was to hand a different employee each day a PC with 300 plus thousand records on it and tell them to take it home as a way of having data security. Now, any of us that have been involved in data security realized that was dumb, not criminal, but dumb. And the sort of thing that if you had to write up what the data security for that part of the organization is, you would not hand to your boss a statement on data security and disaster backup that included giving somebody, a different employee each day, a PC and telling them to take it home so that if the place burned down, all the records wouldn't be destroyed. In that case, it's my belief on information that I've had that the CEO and the organization has taken their responsibility very seriously and spent enormous money to get their data system and their data security in the sense that it ought to be. But it really struck me as I was pondering that case that we ought to find a way to get the CEOs of healthcare organizations to take the same interest in the data security prior to a disaster that we asked the CEO and CFOs of financial institutions to take in the financial report. So I asked LC to produce a bill, and we have HB 2733 in front of us, that does two things. It requires major covered entities, as defined in 192519, which includes a variety of entities, but including both health insurers and health care providers, under that definition. That's on line 15 of the second page of the bill, to produce an annual report on data security, and including in that annual report to require a statement from the signing officers that they have that they take responsibility for what's in that report, and that they have reported as a part of this shortcomings that they've seen or that they've heard of over the last year. Now, I bring this bill to us as a beginning of this discussion, and I understand there are discussions in other parts of the building, on the other side of the building, on broader questions of data security, because we're all very much worried on the question of identity theft and data security. But healthcare data security has a special issue because we all depend on the organizations that provide us health insurance and provide us health care, that our data is going to be confidential. And I was not one of the 330,000 people or so whose data went south just 2 years ago now, but I talked to many of them, and they felt very nervous and very violated. Now, so far, there's no indication anything's actually happened. That it's probably clear that the person that sold that computer was interested in the computer and not what was on it. But still, it's a very chilling thought to think that number of medical records can go awry. So we have this bill in front of us, and I'm happy to urge your support and to be prepared to answer any questions you have.
Thank you, Representative Greenlick. Are there questions?
I do.
Representative Maurer.
Mr. Chair, where does Blue Cross, where does the Hospital Association come out on this? Because I don't see that we need an overflow room on this.
No. Mr. Chair, Representative Maurer, I hear indications that there's a lot of nervousness about this proposal. And my understanding is that the nervousness is sufficient that some of the people aren't here while their attorneys are reviewing what's involved in this. We're moving a lot faster in this committee than other people have been moving, and this bill came up, I think, pretty recently. So I suspect, and I've been getting informal grumbles from various organizations, but I haven't gotten any specific ones, and I was hoping perhaps some people would be here to testify. The last time I looked at the testimony sheet, it was blank. So I can only assume by that nobody has any problems with the bill, and we can move it forward as fast as we want.
Mr. Chair, there is Joel Ario is signed up, so it's no longer blank, but we do not need an overflow room. Do you have a follow-up?
Yes, I do.
And I don't think they're not here because they support it. I think they're not here because their attorneys are reviewing it. And we'll certainly take enough time to find out what's on their mind.
you state that there's no financial. Well, there's no financial to the state that going through an audit.
Sorry, no, I didn't state there was no financial.
That? I guess maybe you said
we haven't got a financial. I suspect there will be some financial impact because the state does have to accept it. I mean, I'm not sure that they'll keep going that way. Well, as yet, we have not received a financial.
Correct. But from an organizational standpoint, say, you know, the health system that I'm familiar with, Asante, sitting on some of their financial committees, is that the cost of an audited report is substantial. And I mean, they take them very seriously. And I don't doubt that that is an appropriate process to go through. But the cost, I mean, this is huge. I mean, this is really huge. The other issue I'm going to have is covered entity, and what does that mean? I haven't gone back and looked at what a covered entity and how low that goes. Because if you're asking a rural health clinic with one provider, is if that is considered a covered entity, to have an audited report, then I would have to respectfully say that that's probably an onerous requirement. I'm sorry.
It's just right here.
Okay.
And it's a...
And I don't know what that is, so...
Yeah, there is some question as to whether, because of the way it's stated, that a covered entity that is required to file an annual financial statement under Section 1, and Section 1 refers to health insurers, whether the intention was only to include health insurers. And the intention was not only to include health insurers, but to include healthcare providers. But I think the definition of a healthcare provider, Representative Maurer, is, Mr. Chair, Representative Maurer, is open enough so that we would certainly want to amend it so that that small healthcare providers are not included in that. We're talking about healthcare systems, basically, like Asante.
Right. If follow up. But I don't think it's inappropriate for any clinic to be required to have written policies that demonstrate some sort of responsibility in compliance with HIPAA, and an additional state requirement that they review that policy annually, or something, because it is a huge issue. And as they convert from paper records to electronic records, especially smaller clinics, it is becoming more of an issue every month. And so I don't think it's inappropriate for the state to have some role to ensure that these smaller facilities are doing it, but within a confined or constrained way, so that it doesn't put them out of business, or you know where I'm going with that.
Yeah, I do. Sure, Representative Maurer, I think you put your finger on the critical point. When back in the early days when I was with Kaiser, at the time the records got so large and confusing, just before they converted to electronic medical records, the basic safeguard was that you couldn't find a third of the records anyway, so at any one time. So there was a certain security and chaos.
That's reassuring.
Well, that really pushed them to spend in this region alone nearly $500 million on an automated medical record system, because it did become an imperative to produce modern medical care. But once you get that in a central electronic version, it makes them extremely vulnerable, and that's where the data security becomes very, very important. Far more important, in fact.
Are there any other questions? All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Why don't you just keep on sharing?
All right. I will call then Joel Ario to the witness stand. Hi, Joel.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Joel Ario, the Administrator of the Insurance Division within the Department of Consumer and Business Services. Before I speak to the bill, someone from the audience suggested to me that the reason why the insurers are not here may have something to do with Senate Bill 407, which is being heard at this same time in Room C. That bill is an any-willing provider bill that would require all insurers to pay all payers, all providers at the same rates, and I think the chair can appreciate how that would affect Kaiser and some of the other insurance companies. So I guess they probably saw this, not to speak for them, but as the lesser of two evils at this moment in time. I am here, though, to speak in favor of the concept of this bill. I think Chair Greenlich described well the issue here, and if we are concerned as a society with the financial propriety of companies, we also ought to be concerned about the protection of individually identifiable health information. And so I think some way of addressing this problem is appropriate. So we come here in support of the concept. The other two comments I have are that the particular way this bill goes about it, we have some questions and concerns with it's attached to a part of the statutes that are not primarily but exclusively related to financial related issues and part of a national accreditation program. So the particular statute here, 731574, we think is not probably the best location for this responsibility, because it would be the only non-financial issue in that program. It may even have some impact on our accreditation through the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. We did then, I instructed staff, if this doesn't work in that part of the statute, let's think about options where it could be done. We've had some preliminary discussions with some members of the industry as well. And I think at this point I'll give you four different ideas, starting with the one that seems to be the most promising, and that is that every health insurer does have to designate a HIPAA privacy officer. HIPAA, excuse me for using an acronym here, the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, federal law that sets up some of the privacy protections here. Every company does have to name a privacy officer under that statute and to lodge responsibilities related to this bill with that person might make some sense. So that's one place to lodge it. I understand that that would be an alternative to the probably back up a minute. The way you've got it set up in the bill currently, it would be two signing officers, two principal officers of the company. So the question is, should it be those folks or should it be the HIPAA privacy officer that has primary responsibility here? And then you could obviously supplement that with other certifications. The other three ideas that we've looked at are some kind of audit committee that reports to the board of directors. There are precedents for that in the insurance code, that this responsibility for certifying the kind of information that's here would rest with an audit committee that would report directly to the board of directors. Another possibility is to have an outside auditor of some sort, so that you have a pair of eyes on this that is outside the company, and that would relate to what is common in the life insurance industry today, which is to have the members of something called the Insurance Marketplace Standards Association, which requires an independent third-party audit of sales practices on a biannual basis. So this could be modeled after that kind of program. That program is not statutory today, but it is a model for how this could be done. And then finally, there would be precedents under the code for certified opinions. Typically under the insurance code, those are certified audit actuarial opinions. So you take some kind of professional who has to certify to their professional expertise and then certify to the accuracy of results. So all of those are options. In our preliminary discussions with the industry, we heard, more or less the same thing that I'm testifying to, which is, yes, this is an important area, and the concept is a good one if we can figure out a practical way in which somebody can do this without a lot of cost, et cetera. Those are the kind of issues that get raised. But I was here today to support the concept and offer those ideas, and I'd be happy to answer any questions, or we'd be happy to participate as a department in any further discussions of how to move forward on the idea.
Thank you, Joel. Are there any questions for Mr. Arroyo? Representative Maurer.
You mentioned that insurers have to have a privacy officer. Any healthcare provider, whether it's a sole practitioner, has to have a HIPAA policy, a information security policy, identifying a privacy officer, whether or not themselves. It could even, in a one-person shop, it could be that person. So the federal law does require that you identify these people. So I caution that we marry things up with the federal law very carefully so that we're not at odds but not duplicating work.
Mr. Chair, Representative Maurer, that does get to an issue in the bill, which is, I think the chair was right to say that the way it's worded currently in sub 2 on line 15 of page 2, it really is limited now to health insurers because it's a covered entity that has to file with us, and those are only health insurers. So the providers, the way the bill is currently written, wouldn't be covered. If the committee did choose to cover providers, we obviously wouldn't speak to that part of the bill other than to say that we have not had in any other context enforcement authority around providers. So if there was going to be a provider piece of this bill, we would be consistent with our usual advice, which would be you probably ought to think about who's going to oversee that part of the statute other than DCBS.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, I just want to probe that. I had a lot of discussions with the LLC about making sure that it was broader than health insurance companies, and that's where the notion of the covered entity came in. But I think it was your attorney's reading that by saying a covered entity that is required to file brings it back into only including health insurance companies.
Mr. Chair, I do believe that it's limited to the kinds of covered entities that have to file with us, and that would be health insurance. But again, I think if you were going to have other covered entities, it probably be good to have that separate and think about what's the right mechanism for that. And we've had a lot of discussions in different contexts over the years about having provider-related issues come within the insurance code. And by the time those things are talked out in every other context, the decision has been not such a good idea to give DCBS, and particularly the insurance division, any kind of authority with relation to providers. So that's always a difficult question where to put that, but it has never landed with us, and I think we'd tell you that it would be problematic if it did.
Good. Thank you, Mr.
Any other questions for Mr. Iria? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else here to testify on House Bill 2733? I would offer the ordinary chair any closing words.
Thank you. I think this bill does need some refining. The LC was very busy, and we weren't interested in talking to him. I will talk to some of the other organizations before we move it again, and before we act on it again, and see what's on their mind other than they don't want to do anything. Although I don't think that is on their mind. I think the thing that's true is that healthcare organizations, as a result of both the VA and the Providence problems, are taking this thing very seriously, and I don't want to do anything that slows down their internal desire to make sure this problem is taken care of. So I'll be back or not with some amendments after having worked with some of the people that will be most affected by it. And I thank you for your courtesy.
Thank you. Well, with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2733 and adjourn the House Committee on Healthcare Subcommittee on Healthcare Access.